Greetings and welcome, August 23rd, 2023. There's a doubling of the number 23 there. It's 18:32 Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again today. Despite my extreme low energy and struggle against that, waiting to see my electroacupuncture person. So let's start our study for today. It's going to be, first of all, in the article entitled My Story, which is about myself and about my wife on our journey through time and through our journey to Trinity, as one of the important aspects of that particular article. We can see on the map here that Trinity Cabins is located in the upper left here, or just to the left, right on the border of another branch of the Trinity Harbor, the arms of the harbor, as we call them. And then when we drove to Trinity, we went around on this road and arrived here. Sorry about the pictures. I don't want to show those pictures. We arrived at, I'm trying not to show them. They're on the map, on the Google map, but we drove around to this particular southwest arm of the harbor. That's where the road was, and then we took a picture there, and then we drove on here to Trinity. So Trinity's over here, and that's next to Hog's Nose. This is the, this is Hog's Nose right here. This promontory that juts south of Trinity. And on the west side of Hog's Nose is the place where my ancestor, Edward Rowe, had his shipbuilding enterprise, right there on the west shore of that, within the southwest arm of the body of Trinity Harbor. So that's the story about that. In the article, My Story, if you're reading that, this map may help you. We're going to go to, first of all, Carl Jung said, "Children learn by an adult's example, not by their words." Sun Tzu, the Chinese philosopher, says, "Opportunities multiply as they are seized." I have to get some water. And Mark Twain said, "Human pride is not worthwhile. There's always something lying in wait to take the wind out of it." Isn't that true? I've found that to be so very true. Let me get some water. I have some absolutely icy water, icy cold, which is the best, especially when it's been salted the way you like it. Oh, with just enough water. I mean, just enough salt. Just enough salt to make it taste delightful. Not so as to make it taste salty. The minerals in the salt. So you need mineral water like Himalayan salt or Utah Salt Lake minerals. Something like that. I've got some of both in my water. Now, our clip from the Root Cause movie, it's a movie documentary from 2018. Here's our clip for today.
The vast majority of chronic degenerative diseases begin with problems in the mouth, infections and toxins, and it's only until those are addressed that you're going to get any clear positive response with your disease. I had a gal come in here who was early 40s, very fit, very nutrition conscious. Came in here because she had severe, horrible back pain.
Right.
In fact, the first day that she walked...
Yeah, we've seen that before. So that we can stop there for today. So all of these degenerative diseases have their cause. Now, we know the gut is important, but this expert here that we just heard, he's an expert on all of these problems in the mouth. He says all of these degenerative diseases are caused by these problems in the mouth, infections, tooth extractions that were not properly curated and sanitized, either using ozone or some effective disinfectant so that the bone could grow in after removing the periodontal ligament, or the LPD, as the French call it. So now let's move to our song. Is it? Yes, our song. We're ready for the song. We've already done the map of Trinity Harbor. Now there's more to the map of Trinity Harbor, but it's, you know, it's hard to show it all in one view because it's a very large harbor with different arms in it. Fleetwood Mac. They released a song in 1977 called Dreams. This is, and it was number one in Canada on the RPM Adult Contemporary and number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in the U.S. in 1977. This is a song written by the American singer Stevie Nicks and recorded by her band, which it was a British American rock band called Fleetwood Mac. It's called Dreams. Without further ado, then.
Thank you.
That song, you notice the laid back beat on the vocal, just waiting kind of to come, so the vocal hits on the end of the beat, or late rather than early. That's different in this song compared to some of the songs we've been listening to. And I'm just learning all these things, including what the song's words actually are, for the first time as I'm going through this now with you. Like, as we're listening together, I haven't had time to go through the vocals or through the lyrics yet. Until I actually play it. So I'm just learning these things now, and it's because the song already has a lot of memories right back as far as 1977. For me, it's an exquisite journey to go through these, and that was a song that I associated with a lot of memories at the time. Back in 1977, I was at Queen's University. A good point. What time in the year was it released? I guess it was released early March. Okay, that's why there was only a chart for that year. But it had two number one hits in Canada and the U.S. respectively. That's number one chart positions, which is amazing. It's a huge hit. I mean, I never would have guessed that song was a huge hit, and it wouldn't have had to have been a huge hit in order to be extremely great. Just like Stairway to Heaven, the best song maybe of all time. Rock song, anyway. But that's what we're saying. The best song of all time in the world of rock music, I think, is what we're saying for that. But unless you can encompass everything, all fields of music in a list of greatest songs, which I don't think was the intent of the magazine Rolling Stone in their 500 greatest. List. Anyway, essentially all scholars of this period, talking about now the period of the time of the birth of Jesus, in our Born and Raised article, which is regarding the births and the raising of Jesus, essentially all scholars of this period, although many be the differences in the precise dates given, believe that King Herod died before the Common Era, and so the logical result of this accepted fact is that the birth of Jesus occurred before the Common Era also. But also as many as 2 years before the death of Herod, as the massacre of the innocent boys was during Herod's life. Now this was the King Herod who died before the turn of the Common Era, and he ordered all boys 2 years and younger to be massacred. Therefore, this event, when he ordered that, was likely 2 years, up to 2 years after the birth of Jesus, and Herod had not yet died, clearly, at that point. So that would mean that whenever Herod died, we can go roughly 2 years back and find the birth of Christ based on that. So really, the questions about Quirinius are not going to cast many doubts upon the year when Jesus was born. It has nothing to do with Quirinius in the case of Herod's death. And this order that Herod gave regarding the massacre of the young boys, we have seen that year to be, meaning the birth of Jesus, BCE 6, which is only 4 years and little more before year one of our Common Era, because, of course, Jesus having been born late in the year BCE 6, and there being no year zero, it's only a little more than 4 years. Minus one is five, but we have the fact that Jesus was born very late in the year 6, so it's really only six minus one, minus another one gives us four. The reasoning advanced by Mr. Ramsey in his marvelous discussion of this time period is that Caesar Augustus had begun a series of enrollments. A series of enrollments, right? This wasn't the only census that Caesar Augustus ordered, namely the one that had to do with the family of Jesus. That wasn't the only census. As evidenced, to continue reading in the paragraph, as evidenced by the papyri preserved in Egypt of these registration lists. Paper did not preserve well in the wetter climates or in the countries north of Egypt and had all perished. So we don't have the records of these registrations that Caesar Augustus ordered in the places near where Jesus lived, because those were too wet. Those climates would have destroyed all the documents. They weren't preserved. They weren't kept dry enough unless they were preserved. So all these had perished except for those same ordered by the same emperor, Augustus, but in Egypt, those ones were preserved much better. Of course, closely guarded books such as Luke's didn't suffer the fate of many other public records. Luke's book wasn't really a public record in Luke's time. It was closely guarded and kept dry by his fellow believers, and they guarded the scriptures closely, so there wasn't the same rotting of the paper that occurred with these other Roman records, which were just they weren't greatly valued documents necessarily by anybody in particular, whereas Luke's gospel was a very important document, and it was preserved by the faithful ones. Which, that's one more reason to put faith in the records of Luke. So, our proverb for today, little children, Proverbs 4 and 15, speaking about the way of the bad ones, shun it. Do not pass along by it, turn aside from it, and pass along. Shun it. In other words, avoid it. Do not pass along by it, turn aside from it, and pass along. Avoid the path of the wicked ones, little children. It's excellent advice indeed. Now, from our reading in the Hebrew Scriptures, we're reading in the final book of the Mosaic Law, Deuteronomy, and we're at chapter 14, where Moses is speaking to the Israelites on the plains beside, on the east side of the Jordan River opposite Jericho. Moses continues, "Sons you are of Jehovah your God. You must not make cuttings upon yourselves or impose baldness on your foreheads for a dead person. For you are a holy people to Jehovah your God, and Jehovah has chosen you to become his people, a special property out of all the peoples who are on the surface of the ground. You must eat no detestable thing of any sort. This is the sort of beast that you may eat, the bull, the sheep, and the goat, the stag, and the gazelle, and the roebuck, and the wild goat, and the antelope, and the wild sheep, and the chamois, and every beast that splits the hoof, and that forms a cleft into two hooves, chewing the cud among the beasts. It you may eat. Only this sort you must not eat out of those that chew the cud or that split the hoof, cloven, the camel and the hare and the rock badger, because they are chewers of the cud but do not split the hoof. They are unclean for you. The pig also, because it is a splitter of the hoof, but there is no cud. It is unclean for you. None of their flesh must you eat, and their carcasses you must not touch. This sort, out of everything that is in the waters, you may eat. Everything that has fins and scales, you may eat. And everything that has no fins and scales, you must not eat. It is unclean for you. Any clean bird, you may eat. But these are the ones of which you must not eat, the eagle and the osprey and the black vulture and the red kite and the black kite and the gleed, according to its kind, and every raven according to its kind, and the ostrich and the owl and the gull and the falcon according to its kind, the little owl and the long-eared owl and the swan and the pelican and the vulture and the cormorant, and the stork and the heron according to its kind, and the hoopoe and the bat. And every winged swarming creature is unclean for you. They should not be eaten. Any clean flying creature you may eat. You must not eat any body already dead. To the alien resident who is inside your gates, you may give it, and he must eat it. Or there may be a selling of it to a foreigner, because you are a holy people to Jehovah your God. You must not boil a kid in its mother's milk. Without fail, you should give a tenth of all the produce of your seed, that which comes forth of the field year by year, and before Jehovah, your God, in the place that he will choose to have his name reside there. We know that was the temple once the Israelites arrived, and once in the Promised Land, and once the temple was built. Otherwise, it was the tabernacle in the Promised Land, which was for a time at Shiloh. So, at this chosen place, chosen by Jehovah, you must eat the tenth part of your grain, your new wine, and your oil, and the firstborn ones of your herd and of your flock, in order that you may learn to fear Jehovah your God always. Now, in case the journey should be too long for you, because you will not be able to carry it, since the place that Jehovah your God will choose to place his name there will be too far away for you, because Jehovah your God will bless you, you must then turn it into money. And you must wrap the money up in your hand and travel to the place that Jehovah your God will choose. You must also give the money for whatever your soul may crave in the way of cattle and sheep and goats and wine and intoxicating liquor and anything that your soul may ask of you. And you must eat there before Jehovah your God and rejoice, you and your household. And the Levite who is inside your gates, you must not abandon him, for he has no share or inheritance with you. So he needs, in other words, some consideration. At the end of 3 years, you will bring out the entire tenth part of your produce in that year, and you must deposit it inside your gates. And the Levite, because he has no share or inheritance with you, and the alien resident and the fatherless boy and the widow who are inside your gates must come, and they must eat and satisfy themselves, in order that Jehovah your God may bless you in every deed of your hand that you will do. And that concludes Deuteronomy 14, little children. Let's have another study in Galatians, from Galatians 5. Paul writing to the Galatians, talking about, let's look back at 4, see what he said in chapter 4 at the end. You are children, or we are, Paul said, not children of a servant girl, but children of the free woman. Symbolized by, of course, Sarah, right? Or effectively in the illustration with Hagar and Sarah, the free people were symbolized by Sarah, the Israelites under the new covenant, which is the covenant that Jesus initiated. Now, verse 5 of Galatians, where Paul's writing to the Galatians. This freedom that he was talking about to do with the being children of the free woman. For such freedom Christ set us free. Therefore stand fast and do not let yourselves be confined again in a yoke of slavery. See, I, Paul, am telling you that if you become circumcised, Christ will be of no benefit to you. Moreover, I bear witness again to every man getting circumcised that he is under obligation to perform the whole law. So if you do circumcision as a religious act, is what he's talking about, you could still be circumcised as a matter of cleanliness, you know, for reasons of physical health, of course. If you decide that is appropriate. You are parted from Christ, whoever you are that try to be declared righteous by means of law. So if you're performing circumcision because it's part of the Mosaic law, that's separate. You've separated yourself from Christ because Christ did away with the law. You have fallen away from his undeserved kindness. For our part, we by spirit are eagerly waiting for the hope for righteousness as a result of faith. As regards Christ Jesus, neither circumcision is of any value, nor is uncircumcision, but faith operating through love is. It doesn't matter whether you're circumcised at all. If you're getting circumcised because you want to perform the Mosaic Law, you've separated yourself from Christ because the Mosaic Law doesn't apply anymore. You were running well. Who hindered you from keeping on obeying the truth? this sort of persuasion is not from the one calling you. A little leaven ferments the whole lump. I am confident about you, who are in union with the Lord, that you will not come to think otherwise. But the one who is causing you trouble will bear his judgment, no matter who he may be. As for me, brothers, if I am still preaching circumcision, why am I still being persecuted? Then indeed the stumbling block of the torture stake has been abolished. Paul is not preaching circumcision. He's preaching the torture stake of the Christ. I wish the men who are trying to overturn you would even get themselves emasculated. In other words, have their testicles removed. You were, of course, called for freedom, brothers. Only do not use this freedom as an inducement for the flesh. So don't turn back to the fleshly things of the Mosaic Law, but through love, slave for one another. For the entire law stands fulfilled in one saying, namely, you must love your neighbor as yourself. If, though, you keep on biting and devouring one another, look out that you do not get annihilated by one another. But I say, keep walking by spirit, and you will carry out no fleshly desire at all. For the flesh is against the spirit in its desire, and the spirit against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other, so that the very things that you would like to do, you do not do. In other words, your flesh causes you to do things that your spirit doesn't really want you to do. It's hard to resist your fleshly desires. Furthermore, if you are being led by spirit, you are not under law. Now, the works of the flesh are manifest. And they are, verse 19, fornication, uncleanness, loose conduct, idolatry, practice of spiritism, enmities, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, contentions, divisions, sects, envies, drunken bouts, revelries, and things like these. As to these things, I am forewarning you, the same way as I did forewarn you, that those who practice such things will not inherit God's kingdom. On the other hand, the fruitage of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faith, mildness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. Moreover, those who belong to Christ Jesus impaled the flesh together with its passions and desires. Meaning they're not controlled by their passions, not that they don't have passion. If we are living by spirit, let us go on walking orderly also by spirit. Let us not become egotistical, stirring up competition with one another, envying one another. And that ends our study of Galatians chapter 5, and that concludes our study for today, everyone. So I hope you enjoyed this, and may you have a wonderful day for the duration. It is now roughly 4 minutes from the end of our study. Our study's over. So within the 4 minutes, what can I say? Well, yeah, I had to do a lot of documenting of all the issues. There were very few issues with the 94 Honda Accord that I was receiving back from the dealership. And it was just that the problems that were there, I wanted to document them fully, so I proceeded step by step, and I isolated the problem of the charging, where the battery wouldn't charge. That was isolated by simply replacing, I discovered the cause by simply replacing the two bulbs in the blinker parking light assembly at the front. It's not the marker light assembly, but it does have one light. The blinker light's on the side and the parking light's at the front. So you could call it the marker light assembly too, I think. But we were calling it that. But I think the two bulbs they looked suspect. For one thing, they looked burned out, but yet apparently they still had intact filaments. And now I'm wondering whether there was, of course, there were broken parts inside the assembly. Some fragments that have been broken off, and that was on the passenger side. So when I replaced those two, bulbs, it fixed the problem and the battery could now charge really well, but not even as well as afterwards today when I changed the two bulbs on the driver's side. And all the bulbs are now LED bulbs instead of incandescent. But the evidence of sabotage is still there, because on the driver's side there was the clip that holds it in with a screw. The assembly is held in with a screw by a clip that's attached. It's all a one-piece plastic with a screw hole to attach it to the car. That clip was broken off, completely broken off. So I glued it back on. Fortunately, it had like a triangle-shaped edge that I could use and glue all around with epoxy. So it's glued on three corners, which is incredibly strong, maybe about 3/4 inch length for each of those sides. I mean, that's a strong, strong thing. That's not going to break if I did all the gluing procedure correctly, which I think was pretty good. Went fairly close to exactly the way I wanted it to. That means that assembly is now back to normal in terms of it's almost looks new, except for it's on the inside where the gluing is, so you can't see that. But I mean, it's now functioning with the mechanical part that was broken having been fixed. But also, when I replaced the bulbs, it fixed the dash problem. I went on two separate 12-kilometer loops to heat the car engine and everything up, heat all the wiring up, heat it all up inside. It needs to be warm before that problem manifests with the dash lights going off. And that fixed the dash lights. So even with two loops, one loop would cause the dash lights to go off before. Now two loops and the dash lights are still working. They only come on when you turn on the parking or the headlights or whatever. But so now I have apparently fixed the dash light problem, and on the passenger side bulbs replacement front, the battery charging issue was fixed. So when I went out today, I got over 1,000 cold cranking amps with all four of those bulbs changed. Now, I think the only real problems were the parking lights. I don't think the blinker lights on the same circuit. Let's see what we have here. Let's look at, please, Jehovah, help me here. That's not what I want. I want to go to the list. Here we go. There's the service manual. That's the one. Yeah. So on this fuse number 32, right here, on this fuse 32, dash lights, parking lights, tail lights. My tail lights were working, so I didn't have to play with that, and there was no evidence of sabotage there. But 32 dash lights, parking lights, tail lights, and license plate lights. So it was the parking lights that were not coming on. When I had the dash light problem, I also had the parking lights not working when the dash lights were out. So it looks like it didn't have to do with the blinker lights, which are the other lights in that assembly. Specifically wasn't those, but anyway. But that's okay. That was a manual list of the fuse boxes. This is the fuse box, actually, for the Honda Accord 1994, and it shows fuse 32 is right there in that position there, and you can find it by looking at the fuse box inside the car. But that's the story, and I'm done. So we're at 33. I love you. Bye for now.